Hello and welcome to Manufacturing.net's Security Breach. I'm Jeff Ranke, and today I'm joined by Brian Vecci, the field CTO of Varonis, a leading provider of cyber threat detection, data security, and response compliance software. Varonis recently published their 2021 Manufacturing Data Risk Report, which offers analysis on threats, trends, and potential solutions for a number of market sectors, including manufacturing. Their findings show that manufacturing was the fifth most targeted industry last year, with the average data breach costing nearly $5 million and taking over 7 months to contain. Overall, Varonis feels the industrial sector's level of cybersecurity sophistication lags behind many of its peers in the financial and healthcare sectors. So, Brian, we've known for a while that cybersecurity is an ongoing concern for the industrial sector, but your report shined a light on a couple of very specific flaws. What were some of the bigger takeaways for you in compiling the report?
Sure, and I think what's really true in the industrial and manufacturing sector over time is that from a security or a cybersecurity perspective, we've often focused on perimeters, trying to control access to the environment through firewalls or trying to really secure the devices that people use, the phones and laptops and things like that. And what this report really highlights is that where most of the risk is on the data itself. That's where too much data is exposed. It's very difficult to understand who's got access to what. A lot of manufacturing companies aren't really monitoring how the data is accessed. And the problem with that is that these days, the target of these cyber attacks is data, it's files. When you can lock down a company's files and take down their operations, they really need to focus on ensuring that that data is properly protected, if that makes some sense.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things that jumped out at me, and I think to a lot of people once they get a chance to look at the report, is you mentioned on the very first day of employment, a lot of employees can have access to over 6 million files, and as many as 27,000 of those can contain sensitive information. So a couple different things to maybe go over here. First of all, how would you define sensitive information in terms of what types of data that would encompass? And then also, when we're talking in manufacturing, how can you help some of our viewers of this video define what sensitive data is, and then therefore really setting up some of those parameters to safeguard it?
Sure, there's lots of ways to define this, but the most common ways are files that contain things like PII, the personally identifiable information of customers, partners, employees. A lot of manufacturers are B2B, and there are another way to identify sensitive data is to look for things like intellectual property, manufacturing diagrams, recipes, things like that. And that kind of information traditionally is thought of as being stored in more structured systems, but what's clear in a world where people are supposed to be able to access anything from anywhere, from any device at any time, a lot of that information ends up in these file systems. They end up in files and the documents and PDFs and spreadsheets and presentations that we use as part of our everyday work. So defining, when we say sensitive data, it's the files that contain really important information, whether it's regulated or not.
Can you be too safe? is there a way that you could almost have too many files that you do define as being sensitive and therefore limiting your operations in any way? Or is it really just being safer is better?
What's interesting about this is that finding sensitive data doesn't actually necessarily solve any problem. So the short answer to the question is no, because data is data. And it's not necessarily sensitive data that's getting accessed and being locked down that's disrupting operations. Sometimes it's files that are just related to applications that don't contain any sensitive data per se, but are critical for the operation of the business. So one way to think about this is sensitive data is a really useful input to prioritize risk, because risk is really the overlap of how likely is it that something's going to go wrong and what's the impact of that happening. But since data sensitivity doesn't necessarily solve a problem on its own, what you really want to understand is where you're at risk, reduce it safely without breaking anything, and then understand when behavior is potentially risky as well. And data sensitivity is an important input into that, but it's not the only one.
Behavior is an interesting point to bring up. And that can be something that's so part of a company's culture, and now they have to adapt that sort of in this new age of being so protective of this data and assessing risk. In your experience, what have been some of the behaviors that companies need to adjust or change or really highlight for either employees who have been there a while or the folks just coming in the door?
Well, when we talk about behavior, there's a couple of ways to look at it. The first one is a lot of companies, especially ones that have been around for a long time, have had an attitude about data that it should just be open to everybody and accessible by everybody in the name of collaboration. The problem with that is that we're now in a world where malicious access to data, whether it's an insider stealing intellectual property, like chemical recipes and walking across the street to a competitor, which we just saw a couple of months ago in one of our incident response investigations, or, and this is where I think a lot of people are thinking through this lens these days, an outside attacker like a cyber criminal group getting access to your network and then denying service to data by encrypting it after they've exfiltrated it so they can extort you for both the decryption keys and extort you to prevent them from releasing all of that data on the dark web. So there's two kinds of behaviors that we need to think about. How do our employees behave with this data, and what's our culture around treating data much more like a business asset than a technology one? These files, this data, they don't belong to IT, they don't belong to security, they don't belong to compliance. The data is a lot more like the money in a financial account or the products that are on a manufacturing floor. The data is a business asset, and it needs to be treated as such, because I guarantee you not every employee has access to all of the money in your financial accounts, nor does every employee have access to every system on a manufacturing floor. But then there's also tracking the behavior of those employees, and not necessarily in a Big Brother standpoint to identify productivity issues, but really to understand what's normal, so that when an employee or an application or a service account starts behaving strangely, which is what's going to happen during one of these attacks, you can know about it quickly and respond to it quickly. Because we're in a world now where the longer it takes you to identify that there is some sort of misbehavior, like my account is suddenly being used to access and encrypt a lot of data or exfiltrate it out through a website, the longer it takes you to identify that, the more damage is going to be done, and the longer it takes you to come to a conclusion about what happened. How did they get access? What else did they touch? Who else could have accessed this data? Was any of it stolen? The longer it takes you to answer those questions, the more long-term damage can be done, both operationally, reputationally, and frankly, cyber insurance isn't covering all of the damage these days.
Absolutely. Those are fantastic points, especially looking at that data as an asset like you would in something on the plant floor, something that definitely demands a paradigm shift from a lot of folks in the manufacturing sector. Brian, in looking at the report, one of the terms that really caught my attention was blast radius, in defining some of those things that we mentioned as risks. Maybe you could define that a little bit for the audience and really kind of relate that to some of the things you found with the report as well.
It's a great term. It's one I use all the time. And the right way to think about it is this. Imagine a bomb going off. How big is the radius of that explosion? How much damage is going to get done? So now let's think about a cyber attack. Let's imagine for a second that one of your employees, I'll use myself as an example, clicks on an email and they get phished. This happens all the time. It's one of the most common intrusion vectors for a threat actor, is to get access through a phishing attack. And what that does is that gives that threat actor, gives the bad guy, access to my account because I am the one that clicked on that email. From that point, the threat actor's goal is to move laterally, go through the network, escalate the privileges, and get access to data. The problem is if my account has access to way too much information, if I have access to everything, if I have access to 6 million files, if 20% of the data in the company is just open to me, that threat actor's job is a whole lot easier. The blast radius of setting off the bomb with my account is much larger than really it needs to be, because frankly, in my role, I don't need access to these 6 million files. I don't need access to 20% of the data. I need access to a fraction of a percent of that in order to effectively do my job, even in a world where we're collaborating a lot. So one of the goals of a lot of manufacturing companies is to reduce the blast radius of a potential attack by doing two things. One, eliminating the data eliminating the exposure that could lead to a widespread attack by any account, by any user clicking on the wrong link, by any insider deciding to break bad and go the wrong way, by any application account getting hijacked by an outside attacker, eliminating that overexposure. One of the things we highlight in the report is that about 20% of the data is in a typical organization is literally, and I mean literally, and I'm not just using that as an exaggeration, literally open to every human being, contractor, every application, every service account. The blast radius of an attack is massive. So that's step one. And then step two is doing your best to ensure that people only have access to what they're supposed to, especially as those needs change, roles change, projects end. Let's take that access away when it's no longer needed. And as you say, that's a bit of a paradigm shift from how a lot of companies have operated for a long time. But we live in a world where data is just too valuable and the risk associated with it is much higher than it ever has been.
Absolutely. And, you know, we use terms like this blast radius. And I think sometimes that scares people. but it has to, because this is such an important and critical element that we're talking about in day-to-day business. One of the things in the report that scared me as well was when you talked about passwords and how folks are not changing passwords and how simple they are to crack. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that in terms of what you found out via the report and some very basic advice that we can give to manufacturers with password protections.
Yeah, this is right up there with patching your servers, right? And making sure that you have the most basic hygiene in place. But what we see over and over again, we do risk assessments for manufacturing companies to take a look at their network, take a look at their data, take a look at their kind of security posture. And what we often find is that so many accounts don't even have password policy set and passwords have never been reset. It becomes table stakes from a security standpoint, because again, our job as in the security industry, or even inside a company, the security role, our job is to make it as hard as possible for a malicious threat actor to get access to our data. Locking down data is a great first step, but so is ensuring that people have long and complex passwords. These days, it's not somebody walking by your desk and looking at the post-it note that you have posted and grabbing your password that way. These days, it's sophisticated password cracking and techniques like Kerberosting that can get access to an account very easily. And if your passwords are short and simple and have never been changed, especially really valuable passwords like administrative passwords or the domain passwords that can grant somebody access to almost everything, you're really setting yourself up for a very damaging attack in the future.
Absolutely. Brian, we've talked a lot about a lot of things within the industry as it relates to cybersecurity. Maybe you can tell us just a little bit more about Varonis, what you guys do, and who you're working with.
Sure. So maybe the right way to think about Varonis is we've been in business now for about 15, 16 years. And we came about because in the mid-2000s, there was an oil company, very similar to the manufacturing industry, that was drilling off the coast of Africa. And they were mapping the ocean floor and taking pictures, trying to figure out where to drill. And they were storing a huge amount of data. And one day, and this is before any of us had ever heard the term ransomware, one day all that data was gone. It wasn't locked down, it was just gone. And they had a lot of questions about what happened and who did it, who could have done it. And some of the engineers involved in that investigation let them know two things. One, there was no record of how that data was touched. They can't answer basic questions. And two, it would take them years to figure out who could have done it and who could have had access based on the complexity of how people get access to data. And that's when the light bulb went off. And Varonis was founded as a data security company. We created a software platform that helps organizations secure this particular kind of data. Not only knowing which files contain sensitive information, but having a deep understanding of the data first. Who's got access to it, how it's being used, where it's concentrated, where it's being used and where it's not. And really critically, we help our customers understand and measure and reduce the risk to that data, to reduce the blast radius and to monitor things appropriately so that if something ever does go wrong, they know about it quickly and they can investigate it quickly. And it turns out when you do those two things well, when you minimize the blast radius and ensure least privilege to data, and you make sure that people can collaborate safely without exposure, and you're watching everything really closely and you know when something goes wrong, turns out it's a whole heck of a lot easier to keep that data private and to prove that you're compliant. So that's how we help our customers. We make sure that data is protected, that they can detect and respond to threats effectively, and that they can prove that they're compliant.
Excellent. You mentioned ransomware as being a key part in the founding sort of elements of the company. You know, in recent months, there's been some high profile ransomware attacks in the manufacturing sector. We had Colonial Pipeline. We also had a huge food processor that were both attacked. They both paid the ransom to get back up and running. A couple things. First, your thoughts on those situations overall. And then maybe you can give some advice, because I think in manufacturing, with uptime being such a big deal, there is more of a proclivity to pay the ransomware, get back going. So what are your thoughts sort of on those two situations, and then overall if people are attacked with ransomware?
Well, I don't want to comment on any particular attack, because there's, you know, it's easy as a security person to say they should have done X, Y, and Z. I think they just highlight the issues that we've been talking about. Both of those attacks attacked files. They weren't necessarily sensitive files, but the denial of service to those files, the encryption, the extortion, resulted in significant downtime, and nobody wants to be in that situation. But those kinds of situations can arise when the blast radius is too big and you're not watching data carefully. As for the second question about paying the ransom, It's very easy to sit on in a tower and say never pay the ransom. You should never do that, and it's a lot of organizations' policies never to do that. However, you're right. Denial of service to data can cause downtime, and at some point you have to make a decision: can I get my data back? What's really interesting is that we've seen the cyber criminal groups, the ransomware groups, sometimes have better customer service than some of the security vendors that these companies are using to try to investigate and detect these attacks, because it's in their interest to get paid, and it's in their interest to, you know, have credible customer support so that a company feels comfortable giving them $10, $11 million to get their data back. These are the adversaries that we're facing. They're really much more like modern tech companies than what we would normally think of as a bad actor sitting in a basement or an internet cafe somewhere. These are organized, mature, sophisticated cyber criminal groups that are trying to get access to your data. And one thing that I think anybody in any role related to protecting company assets needs to realize is that if you have something valuable, somebody wants to get access to it. And these days, what those two situations and basically the front page of the Wall Street Journal every week when we see another breach, another ransomware attack, what they highlight is that data is more valuable than ever, and the incentives to get access to that data are higher than they've ever been. Criminals can get paid anonymously through cryptocurrency, so it is, the incentives are there. If you have valuable data, somebody wants it, and that means it's more important than ever to protect the data, not just the gates and the fences that can protect your outside perimeter, but to protect the data itself.
So Brian, one of the things I like to do in wrapping these up is for you to offer some advice to the manufacturing sector, to the folks watching this video. And really, it feels like we have sort of two different classifications within the industrial sector. We've got individuals who just have not addressed this at all, and some who sort of dipped their toe a little bit and they're familiar, but they probably aren't covered as much as they should. What's your advice to those two groups in either getting started or really taking the next step in advancing your cybersecurity protocols?
What's interesting is that the answer to both of those questions is often exactly the same. If you don't really understand the risk to your data, if you don't know what you have, where it is, how much of it you have, what's being used and what's not, part of our report is that 20% of the data in an average company is just open to everybody. If you can't answer the question definitively, how much of our data right now is open to everybody and where do we have sensitive data? Those two questions, if you can't answer them accurately and definitively across all of the places that somebody could potentially access your information, it's a very good place to start. If you've never taken that step before, it's probably the best place to start. If you do have a maturing cybersecurity or information security program, it's still a great place to start, because if you can't answer those two questions, you don't really know, to use our favorite term today, the potential blast radius of an attack. And it's so easy as a cybersecurity person to say it's not a matter of if but when, but I don't think we live in a world where you can deny that. Somebody is trying to get access to your data. The question is, when they do, what's going to happen? And if you don't know, that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Recent history definitely validates the if not, it's not about if, but when. Absolutely. Brian, awesome stuff. Anything else you'd like to add in terms of the report or some of the work that Varonis is doing?
We're really at the front lines of a lot of this stuff. And we have an incident response team that contributes to our security research. And we're learning new things every day about how these threat actors are acting. But one of the things that's been true for the 15 years since Varonis has been around, I've been here for 11 years now, is that a lot of the core problems exist everywhere. Everybody has this kind of data. Everybody is facing an issue where people want to get access to it. One of the keys in manufacturing specifically is the operational downtime and just how expensive that can be. So I think organizations that are really taking a risk-based approach and trying to understand the data that they have and treating it, as you say, much more like a business asset are far more far further ahead than their competitors. And it can be a real advantage to start thinking about data as a business asset in that way. And I hope more people do.
Thanks so much for that information. For Brian Vecci and Varonis, I'm Jeff Ranke, Editorial Director of Manufacturing.net. This has been The Security Breach.